I recently hosted my program, Both Sides Now, on Medscape, covering physician-assisted dying. And I talked with four experts on this topic, and I thought their interviews were so fascinating, so compelling, that I wanted to give you a chance to hear them individually. The first was with Dr. Maury Markman. He, as an experienced oncologist, is not an advocate of physician-assisted dying. He opposes it. He believes that you can adequately care for terminally ill patients by giving them adequate pain control and emotional support. I want to welcome Maury Markman, who is a physician, president of medicine and science at the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, and clinical professor of medicine at Drexel University's College of Medicine in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, my old stomping grounds for many, many years. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So let me begin. Let's get right into this tough area. What would you say is the most important reason to worry about physician-assisted dying right now? What concerns you right now?
To me, it's rather straightforward. And let me just make it clear, everything I'm talking about is my opinion. One of the things I think we'll come into is, you know, why do people potentially agree or not agree with this whole concept? Mm-hmm. And I'm only speaking for myself. So my feeling is really it comes down to a concern that the reason that somebody may ask for this, which is their right, death is irreversible. And that the reason for asking, I use the general term despair. Mm-hmm. And despair may be potentially temporary, maybe permanent, but that death is permanent. So my concern would be that there might be something reversible from the perspective of a individual patient's despair, and that I would want to be certain that there is not, before I would say, mm-hmm. this makes sense for that person from my perspective. Again, it's always their right to decide what to do, but my role as a physician would be to say, to make sure there isn't something reversible that would lead potentially them to change
and
their
just
opinion.
To emphasize, it's the reversibility of their psychological state.
That's correct. So again, I just as an example, this is an example, and certainly an example in the cancer domain, which again is my experience. Patient could have been taking a tremendous amount of pain medications, and they're not working, and says, you know, nothing is working, and mm-hmm. I accept that. Mm-hmm. However, it could be, and again, I'm being very direct, it could be that, you know, there actually is a single anatomical lesion that has not been appreciated, has been approached, and that, for example, with a nerve block, mm-hmm. Whether it's a interventional radiology approach or a surgical approach, might be able to relieve that pain. And if that pain was then relieved, that could change the patient's psychological approach of their despair of saying, I want to end my life.
What do you say to the person or some of the advocates of allowing assistance in dying by physicians to make the means available to them? What do you say to the patient who says, look, I understand you can manipulate this, manipulate that, but I'm dying, and I don't want to go through all that. I would rather be in control of how I die. I know that you could do this or sedate me or block this or what. I don't want to go through all that.
It's their right. It's as simple as that. And again, as a physician, I would see my role as an advisor, no more than that. Mm-hmm. And if someone were to say that to me, I'd say, I accept that. Did you consider this? Did you consider that? And of course, to some extent, of course, I'm not a psychologist. Mm-hmm. I'm not a psychiatrist. But it's not for me to decide right or wrong. As a physician, I can voice an opinion. I can advise. I can even go to a family member if I think there may be some element that just doesn't make sense to me. Again, based on objective data, you gave me an example. They want to be controlled. I said, but this is potentially curable cancer, let's say. And I say, you know, there may be a concern we're not getting through. Mm-hmm. And my role in that is not to tell the patient they're wrong. My role might be to say, is there another way of approaching this that somehow they're not hearing? And if the answer is, this is their decision, it's their decision.
Do you think some of these highly publicized assisted dying events, Brittany Maynard out in California, all over the media. She decided to go to, I think it was Oregon, to finally end her life because California had not legalized. Is that shaping or influencing what you hear, what your colleagues tell you about requests?
I think this is really a very important example because it follows directly on the basis of what I've said. And my, obviously, I had nothing to do with, I don't know anything about her. I don't know anything mm-hmm. about her mm-hmm. her doctors. I've read some of the things that she has written. And what I would say is it follows very clearly on my concern that somebody might be dealing with despair and, in fact, they might change their mind. She clearly was not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She made it very clear this was a conscious decision. She had thought it through.
Right.
She discussed very openly the therapy she had received. In fact, she went through all standard therapies. She had her surgery. She had her radiation. And at some point, she said to herself, and obviously her advisor, her family, this is a decision I want to make. So what I would say, if that kind of thought had gone in, goes into this,
mm-hmm.
Both objectively, which is what is the medical evidence that we can do, and then her personal thoughts, her beliefs.
Do you think she could be a good example of how to think it through?
That's right. And my only concern with that is, you know, again, I think she's a poster child for thinking it through.
Mm-hmm.
I would be concerned for others. Obviously, I don't know her. I would suggest that she and her family went through incredible discussions,
mm-hmm.
as she describes them. To come to the decision she did, and I would suggest that is the personal requirement to make those kinds of decisions, not my requirement. I would suggest that's really important.
You know, I remember back when Jack Kevorkian was bringing people to Michigan and helping them die in the back of VW vans and so on. One problem I had with that was he didn't know these people.
That's right.
Well, they'd show up and 24 hours later, they'd gone to the hereafter. Some of them terminally ill, some not, as a matter of fact. Do you think physicians, given the constraints they face in terms of time and you know, other activities they have to engage in, paper or whatever it is, can they get to know patients well enough to have reliable discussions about the authenticity, which is what you're talking about their wishes to die?
I would have that concern. Again, obviously, one of the problems we always have in the conversations we're having now is these are general statements. I certainly can make a very strong statement. Physicians don't have enough time to do a lot of things that, you know, paperwork,
right,
et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So I can't, but, you know, one would certainly, I think, be on safe grounds to say the kind of conversation we're talking about would be a lot of time and effort,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which I would suggest physicians would want to be able to spend with their patients, but it doesn't mean they have that time.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, it may be relatively immediate time. So, you know, a patient comes in and they're at a particular point and said, you know, I'm thinking of doing this and I'm thinking of doing it now. And, you know, the doctor has this full schedule, whatever.
Right, exactly.
And
you've been in the cancer area a long time.
I'll
ask you a tough question. Have patients asked you about ending their lives?
I've certainly had that happen. And I guess what I would say is, a very general probably in the cancer arena, it's a little different than perhaps other areas of medicine where this may occur. And you suggest, you know, severe dementia, things
mm-hmm.
like that. And the reason is because often our patients have pain as a serious problem, and they may be taking pain medications. And they often can, by taking the pain medications themselves, make their own decisions. And they actually have that access. I'm not saying that happens often, but it is a patient is on a lot of pain medications, they're in a lot of pain, they could decide to take more of it tonight or tomorrow or the next day, doing it on their own. They don't necessarily have to involve their physician directly,
mm-hmm.
whereas in other areas of medicine where, for example, pain medications would not be the normal part, they wouldn't necessarily have access. They'd have to I need something, and they couldn't sort of do it on their own. My response is that my obligation to you is to treat your symptoms, whatever they may be. I don't tell you what to do or not do. If you need more pain medication, I will mm-hmm. give you whatever you need. And I would leave it at that.
So you're going to make pain management the priority?
Whatever you need.
Even if it risks in bringing about the death?
I would.
Earlier.
Right. I feel very strongly that, first of all, make it very clear, the patient decides. My responsibility is to the patient, and my responsibility is to relieve their suffering. If I believe that there is something amiss in terms of what they're asking, because, as I said, it just doesn't make clinical sense, I will do everything in my power to try to have them think a little differently or talk to their family members. I've had that experience. I said, you know, I think they're not listening what I have to say. We actually have effective treatment, and I know it causes nausea. I know, but if the patient decides that they don't want to do it, I accept that. But, you know, again, would I go to a family in a situation where I think I'm not getting through? Sure, I will, but I don't make that decision. They do. So there's an example. So I would have no problem giving them what they need. Mm-hmm. My intent in that is to relieve their suffering. My intent in it is not to say, you know, they're taking this to end their life.
But I feel you have to give them their choices, including
absolutely
this woman
absolutely
physician will help you.
Absolutely. And again, I feel that, you know, I have an obligation to inform them of the facts. I give again that one example, that pain example, because it's not rare. Mm-hmm. Despair can be horrible. Pain is unbelievable, and people can want to die because it's not relieved. And I would just want to make sure that all available medical options are available, have been available to that patient to potentially relieve the suffering, so that the despair that's leading to that decision might be relieved. Again, in cancer or the pain I'm talking about, there is that potential. I'm not suggesting that's universal by any means, but that would be my concern.
So let me take you down two paths as we sort of move toward the end of our conversation on this. One is, here's a source of despair that's growing. These treatments are causing me to go financially broke. I can't afford $100,000 biologic or immunotherapy, or I simply don't want to spend time here lingering on and on while my grandson's tuition is spent or whatever. We've come to think about this as the problem of financial toxicity, more costs, more tools, but more associated costs. How does physician-assisted dying fit into this emerging area of financial burden?
I would suggest that the topic you've just brought up is a looming giant in the room. And we as a society have to consider it. And I would suggest very strongly that the United States government consider this in their thoughts about how we change the entire structure of healthcare and certainly new drugs, et cetera. And this is not just telling pharmaceutical companies that they have to charge less. We're talking about changing the whole structure, patent law, cost of developing drugs, et cetera, because it is out there. Reports that suggest bankruptcy, which is a major issue increasingly among cancer patients. We know in the past, in the Great Depression, people went bankrupt. Suicide occurred.
Sure.
Why couldn't that happen here? I'm not talking necessarily about today. But when we're talking about therapies that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and they're there, and we have copays of 20%.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts on what's a very, very tough, interesting, and at the same time, I think, fairly emotionally charged issue.
Yes.
And I think we got some progress here, so I thank you very much for your insights.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
To see the complete show, Both Sides Now, covering physician-assisted dying, watch for it on Medscape, the Business of Medicine.